Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I'm going to call the season of Epiphany a greatly underappreciated part of the church year. Usually it's just kind of viewed as a nebulous extension of the short Christmas season or kind of something to fill time between Christmas and the beginning of Lent, depending on when you begin your Lenten observations. But it's so much more. This season of Epiphany is packed with stuff. The images of Christ that just bombard us through the hymns of Epiphany, through the readings of Epiphany, through the seasons and the symbols that we celebrate during the season, that for most people goes completely and utterly unnoticed. It is so much more than simply some wise men came from the east because they'd seen a star heralding the birth of Jesus Christ. So much more. We're going to see how much more as we study the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. on this Monday afternoon, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be studying the hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed, with Dr. Arthur Just of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Then we're going to be looking forward to Sunday morning with one of his colleagues, Dr. Carl Fekencher, looking forward to the third Sunday after the Epiphany. Joining us to look at the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed, Dr. Arthur Just, Professor of New Testament, Chairman of the Department of Exegetical Theology and Director of Spanish-Speaking Pastoral Formation at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Luke and the book Heaven on Earth, The Gifts of Christ in the Divine Service. Dr. Just, welcome back.
Wonderful to be with you during what is one of my favorite seasons, the season of Epiphany.
So what is the Epiphany season? How would you answer that simple question? What makes Hail to the Lord's Anointed, the hymn we're going to be looking at, an Epiphany hymn?
When you look at the church year has the two climaxes of Christmas and Easter, and each of them have a season of preparation. Advent prepares for Christmas, which is, as I said, the climax, and Lent prepares for Easter. In both the Christmas cycle and the Easter cycle, there is a season that follows the climax, that continues the themes of that climax. So if Christmas is not simply the birth of Christ, but as the early church so accented because of the rhythms of nature and the winter solstice, it's the birth of light. Epiphany is the season of light, and light reveals, light shows forth, and Epiphany is about revealing, about showing forth who this child born in Bethlehem really is. And so it is a season in which we see in the hymnody, in the texts, in the accents of Epiphany, the wonderful Savior that we have. And there is maybe in many ways no better hymn than that, than the one we're going to study today, that really talks about what Jesus does and what he comes to do. And you can see that the season of Epiphany, as you probably know from some of the previous times we've been together on the radio, I'm a person who accents from the gospel that Jesus in his teaching and his miracles, you know, is the creator who has come to his creation to set things free, to release it, to forgive it, to heal it. And we call that the new creation, that the creator coming to his creation brings, you know, in this new creation, makes all things new. And this hymn reflects that, that when the creator comes, something happens in the creation, something happens to humanity, something happens to the world. And that we see this revealed to us gradually during the season of Epiphany. And it's a wonderful time for us to recognize exactly who this Christ child is. Now, in the three-year lectionary, there is this wonderful frame in the season of Epiphany. We begin right after the wise men coming on January 6th. The Sunday after that is the baptism of Jesus, where the Father says, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." We end the season of Epiphany just before Lent with the transfiguration of Jesus, where the Father says on the mountain, "This is my elected Son, listen to him." And so you have the Father revealing to us that this is his Son at the beginning and the end of Epiphany. And I mean, if you're following the three-year lectionary, you can see that as we see this burst of glory at the end of Epiphany, we then plunge down into the sort of the penitential darkness of Lent. And really what we do at the end of Epiphany is we look over the valley of the shadow of Lent to Easter. We have an anticipation of Easter before we plunge down into the darkness of penance. And, you know, in the Gospels, for example, in Luke's Gospels, the transfiguration occurs right at the end of his Galilean ministry in chapter 9, verses 28 to 36. And then in 951, he turns his face to go to Jerusalem. And that's what we do in Lent. So Epiphany is sort of this big burst of light, burst of revelation, burst of you know, who is this Christ child before we follow him in Lent to Good Friday and Easter.
What do we know about the author of Hail to the Lord's Anointed?
Well, it's a really interesting story, I think. The name of the author is James Montgomery, and he wrote this for a Moravian congregation, which in many ways tells us a lot in the sense that this was a congregation, this was a church body that was very interested in Christian missions. And you know, I have a kind of a new calling as a career missionary to Latin and South America and Spain. And I've been thinking mission thoughts a lot in the last 6 months or so. But this was, you know, a church body that really had an expansive vision of the mission of the church. And it was first introduced to missionaries at a missionary conference. And then it was linked with this tune and began to be sung. And it's interesting, the name of the hymn before it was called Hail to the Lord's Anointed, it was called The Reign of Christ on Earth. And it goes back to the beginning of the 19th century. I think it was first published. It was a Christmas hymn, 1821. And he wrote it as a, really as a hymn version of Psalm 72. And Psalm 72 is the psalm for Epiphany. So this is really, in many ways, an Epiphany hymn. And I mean that for the day of Epiphany, for the feast of Epiphany. And you can see shot through, you know, the hymn are the images that come from Psalms 72. And I mean, and it's in that psalm that we have that wonderful verse that really marks Epiphany in some ways, that may the kings of Tarshish and of the coastlands render him tribute. May the kings of Sheba and Seba bring gifts. May all the kings fall down before him and all nations serve him. And I mean, one of the themes of Epiphany, this is the light of the nations, is the mission of the church, that Christ now might be born in Bethlehem, might be born in the context of the Jewish world, but he is for all the nations. And Epiphany, with the kings coming, and you know, they were wise men, they were probably from Persia, they were philosophers, astronomers, they were searching for the truth, searching for God. And when they saw that star over Bethlehem, the oral tradition in that part of the world, as it was in many places, was that the ruler of the nations was going to come from Judah. And so when that star appears over Bethlehem, they had no, you know, other choice but to follow it. And those wise men become the three kings, you know, and they represent the nations, really, the east, the west. Tarshish is Spain in the west. Sheba is in the south, like Ethiopia, Africa, and then in another place, it talks about Midian and Ephah, and that's in the east. So the whole world, all the nations are having the light of Christ revealed to them, and they are being drawn now to the child in Bethlehem.
So very briefly, before we get into stanza one, the biblical basis for this is that psalm, and what else?
Well, I think, you know, there's a number of different references here. One is to 2 Samuel 7, to his kingship, that he will be the king like unto David, but greater than David. I think that in Luke 4, the Sermon in Nazareth, one of the most fundamental texts for me in Luke's gospel, the Sermon in Nazareth, where Jesus quotes Isaiah 61 and 58 about his program as the Christ. I think that's certainly built in here. I think you have the notion of Jesus being anointed, reference to his baptism, but especially to Acts 10:38, where it says in the Sermon of Peter to Cornelius that he will be anointed by the Holy Spirit. You know, so there's the sense of him being Christed. I mean, there are others too, but I think Psalm 72 really dominates here. And obviously Matthew chapter 2, the wise men coming is also part of it.
Here is the first stanza. Hail to the Lord's anointed, great David's greater son. Hail in the time appointed, his reign on earth begun. He comes to break oppression, to set the captive free, to take away transgression and rule in equity.
Hail to the Lord's anointed, great David's greater son. Hail in the time appointed, his reign on earth begun. He comes to break oppression, to set the captives free, to take away transgression and rule in equity.
That's the Lutheran Public Radio Choir with stanza one of the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed. What would you highlight in that first stanza, Dr. Jest?
Well, you see here the grounding of this hymn in the present tense of salvation, harking back to the messianic prophecy that great David's greater son would come, that there is a time appointed when the now of salvation would appear, and the fact that this is now on earth, the reign of Christ, because of the incarnation. It is a clear example of how when Jesus enters into the world, when he takes on flesh, the world itself is affected by that presence. And so, you know, when he comes, what he comes to do is, I think it's the best word, it's the word that's out of Isaiah 61 that Jesus cites in his first sermon in Nazareth, sets the program for what he's to do. He's releasing the creation from its bondage. So people who are sick are being healed. People who are possessed with Satan are being freed from that possession. People who are sinners are being forgiven. Even those who are dead are being raised. And this is what he does. He releases. It's a hymn of freedom in a sense. So he comes to break oppression, to set the captive free. That's an exact quotation from Isaiah 61 and Luke 4. And to take away transgression, notice that those are linked together. I mean, we are captive by sin, but we're captained by the virus of sin that affects us with sickness and the onslaughts of Satan. And then, of course, the final consequence is death. And what Jesus does is the Creator who has come to his creation to restore it, to renew it, to heal it, to make it new. That is the whole point of the incarnation. That's why he comes and takes flesh. And the last line, and rule in equity, in a sense you can see there just a hint of the language of justification, that he is here to make right what has gone wrong, you know, to justify. And I that may be reading too much, but that is what his reign and rule is. That's what his kingdom is. It's a kingdom in which he justifies. He declares righteous, you know, because that is the very essence of his kingdom.
Dr. Arthur Jest is our guest. We're studying the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed, on this Monday afternoon. When we come back, the second stanza, He comes with rescue speedy to those who suffer wrong, to help the poor and needy and bid the weak be strong, to give them songs for sighing, their darkness turned to light, whose souls condemned and dying were precious in his sight. Dr. Just will give his thoughts on that second stanza of the hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed, right after the break. Listening to God's Word, daily prayers, frequent and faithful reception of the Eucharist, confession of sins and absolution, good works. Learn more about the life of Lutheran piety in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. It's written by regular guest Pastor Will Whedon. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. Thank, praise, serve, and obey.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Christological, creedal, confessional. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star, shine with a brighter glow.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Stanza 2 of the Epiphany hymn that we're studying on this Monday afternoon with Dr. Arthur Just, Hail to the Lord's Anointed. What would you highlight here in stanza 2, Dr. Just?
Well, first of all, I want you to hear the beautiful way in which this author, in poetic language, is echoing Psalm 72 and then Isaiah 61 and Luke 4. Just listen to this. He says in Psalm 72, may he judge your people with righteousness and your poor with justice. May he defend the cause of the poor of the people, give deliverance to the children of the needy, and crush the oppressed. For he delivers the needy when he calls the poor and him who has no helper. He has pity on the weak and the needy and saves the life of the needy. Or here is Isaiah 61 that is cited in Luke 4. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Now, this is clearly an example of how when the Lord comes, and this is what really kind of disturbed people, even people like maybe John the Baptist and his disciples. He didn't come, you know, kind of with might and power in a military, political way. He came in mercy. He came to release people who were broken by the fallen creation, by the infection of original sin. And you know, those who are suffering, those who are poor and needy, the weak, you know, I love this line, to give them songs for their sighing. I mean, they're sighing from the burden of the bondage under which they live. And these songs are songs in which they can see that when the Messiah comes, he brings both physical and spiritual liberation, that he gives them hope. He shines the light, which is the Epiphany theme. He shines the light in the darkness so that they can see that there is hope, that there is the presence now of the Creator who has come to make things right. And I think it's one of the most beautiful verses in the hymn. You know, I think it really does indicate how, as the last line says, how precious in the sight of Jesus are those who are in need of mercy. And that is one of the great themes of Epiphany, that he comes teaching this and performing miracles of mercy that show that he is exactly who the Old Testament says he is.
Talk about the theme in this stanza of, and you've hinted at it there, of reversal, which is, if you have Mary's Magnificat, in which there's a similar theme, you have Christ's own ministry, where he is constantly talking about firsts being last or greatests being least, things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I call it in the commentary in Luke the great reversal, that in the economy of God's salvation, he does the opposite of what we expect, and that he comes for those who are broken and oppressed and captive, and for sinners, you know, and he himself in his incarnation is the great reversal, that the Almighty God, the all-powerful, omniscient, you know, God comes in a baby, in human flesh. I was talking in class earlier this morning about how we're watching our four-month-old grandson, Henry. And in this season, it's so wonderful to have that gift of a little child, because you can see in this vulnerable, completely, you know, humble state, God comes. Mary has to take care of him. He needs to be, you know, completely, totally taken care of, as you do with a child that's only 4 months old or younger. And I mean, this is the very character of the kingdom. You said it, the first, last, first, humble, exalted, exalted, humble. If you want to save your life, you've got to lose it. You know, I mean, if you want to be his disciples, you got to take up the cross daily and follow him, which means you have to enter into this reversal. This is what we call the theology of the cross, that God reveals himself in the depths of humiliation and shame. And yet, as John's gospel says, there we see his glory.
Stanza 3 of Hail to the Lord's Anointed. He shall come down like showers upon the fruitful earth. Love, joy, and hope, the flowers, spring in his path to birth. Before him on the mountains shall peace, the herald, go, and righteousness in fountains from hill to valley flow.
He shall come down.
This really is a kind of a barrage of images connected to both water, and I would say probably the one you mentioned earlier, even though it's not explicitly mentioned there, light. We have the earth bringing forth abundant fruit in his presence.
Yeah, this is where there is a kind of a shuttle shift from the present to the future, and the natural imagery is abounding here. Now, in the original hymn, I think he had three or four verses that reflected this sort of natural imagery, and when it went through the process of the tradition, it was It was edited down just to this one. But again, listen to Psalm 72. This is verse 6. May he be like rain that falls on the mown grass, like showers that water the earth. In his days may the righteous flourish and peace abound till the moon be no more. It is the waters, the earth, even the mountains. I love that. Before him on the mountains shall peace the herald go. I mean, the fact that revelation is on mountains, that's the great Matthean theme, that God reveals himself on mountain, and the great commission at the end of Matthew's gospel is from a mountain. Zion itself is the mountain to which all the nations flow. That's one of the great themes of Epiphany, that Zion is the place not just for the Jews now, but for all nations to come to, you know, to rise up and see what God has brought about on Mount Zion, which of course it was always thought of as now Calvary, even though Mount Zion is where the temple was built, on the place where Abraham was to have sacrificed Isaac. But Mount Zion is Jerusalem. It is the place of redemption. And I think that if there's one failing to this hymn, it doesn't explicitly reference the cross. You would hope that there would have been one verse there for that. But I think you see it a little bit here. Before him on the mountain shall peace the herald go. That peace comes from the reconciliation that takes place on the mountain outside of Jerusalem where Jesus is crucified, Mount Calvary.
I'm also put in mind of a verse that's made famous by actually Martin Luther King Jr., that we're talking about on this day. He quoted it in a different context, but it's Amos 5:24. In the last two lines of this stanza, let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream.
Yeah, no, that is ironic. And I think, you know, that is what humanity desires, although it doesn't always desire it in the same way. The righteousness that Jesus brings is sometimes different from the righteousness that we in our kind of humanity are seeking. And I think that righteousness, as he says in the beginning of the hymn, manifests itself. When that righteousness comes, it manifests itself in the fruits of the Spirit. I mean, you could almost see a reference here to the fruits of the Spirit of Galatians 5, you know, love, joy, and hope like flowers spring in his path to birth, and then peace, the herald go. I mean, this, when his righteousness breaks forth, that and what that means, I think, is that when he now comes to make right all that has gone wrong in the creation because of sin, then there is now the reality that those of us who live in that righteousness can now bear those fruits of the Spirit like love, joy, and peace, and hope. These are the things that we now possess as those who have been justified, so to speak.
One more that I think I sense here in that line, peace like a herald go on the mountains, Isaiah 52, you might have mentioned it, how beautiful are the feet of
yes,
those
yeah.
who bring the tidings of peace.
Yeah, I think so. I think that is exactly what he's referencing there. And again, that is one of the great, not just passages for the holy ministry, but for missions, you know, that this is what we do. I mean, this is the proclamation of peace from the mountains. And, you know, you can see Jesus has a sense of this, that the church is like a city on the hill. It is a light that shines forth. And that peace is such an important word in the ministry of Jesus. It's a Lucan word. And I know you've heard me say this on the radio. In the liturgy of the church, the historic liturgy, peace is the number one word. That word is repeated more in the liturgy than any other word. And it is really what we all seek and what we all desire. And that's why we come to church. That's really what the Messiah coming to his creation does, is he brings peace. You can see that's the hymn of the angels when he's born in Bethlehem. And it's the hymn of the people as he comes into Jerusalem, in what we now call in the church's liturgy, the Sanctus.
We're studying the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed. Dr. Arthur Just is our guest, author of the 2-volume Concordia Commentary on Luke and the book Heaven on Earth, The Gifts of Christ in the Divine Service. When we come back, stanza 4.
few short years, digital technology has revolutionized the way we live, work, and interact. But what does this mean for the church? In its January issue, the Lutheran Witness magazine looks at digital technology through Lutheran eyes, examining social media, online evangelism, podcasting, and the spiritual implications of these technological innovations for Christians. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey.
The faith once for all delivered to the saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At Concordia Evangelical Lutheran Church of Wilmington, Delaware, our mission is to serve our community by sharing Christian hope. We've been doing this since 1938 and joyfully continue to do so in the 21st century. If you're ever in the city that DuPont Chemical Corporation calls home, or is known by some as the credit card capital of the world, we hope you visit to receive Jesus through His Word and Sacrament. Otherwise, check us out on the web at ConcordiaWilmington.com.
Answering objections defending the faith, evolution or creation, transgenderism and homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Learn more at worldviewsa.org. This conference features Issues Etc. guests Dr. Jan Lohmeyer and Pastor David J. Weber. The San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd, worldviewsa.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're studying the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed. Dr. Arthur Just is our guest, professor of New Testament, chairman of the Department of Exegetical Theology, and director of Spanish-speaking pastoral formation at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where they form servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Learn more about studying for the vocations of either pastor or deaconess at ctsfw.edu or give them a call, 1-800-481-2155. That's 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Just, what should we be listening for in stanza four?
Well, here we have explicit reference in the first line to Matthew 2 and the coming of the wise men, the kings, to worship Jesus. And that spins off into the praise and the adoration and the worship of all nations that are now coming to adore him. All those whose, as it says here, whose prayers and daily vows ascend are captive to the reality that the ruler of the nation, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, is born in Bethlehem, and that he has the light of God's revelation of his redemption in the Redeemer, Jesus, has now come upon the world. And it ends with the kingdom. You know, this is his kingdom increasing, and it's a kingdom that has no end, which leads us to the final stanza, which is about that eternal kingdom. So this is where we kind of begin to bow, pull out the stops, and this is typical of many hymns, as we get to the end, of just simply rearing back and praising God for the light that has dawned, for the revelation of his Son.
Stanza 4, kings shall fall down before him and gold and incense bring. All nations shall adore him, his praise all people sing. To him shall prayer unceasing and daily vows ascend, his kingdom still increasing, a kingdom without end.
Kings shall fall down before him and gold and incense bring. All nations shall adore him, his praise all people sing. To him shall
That stanza 4 of Hail to the Lord's Anointed. Dr. Just, I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to give a little lecture to a group of lay people, and one of the things I was talking about was Paul's famous words, all things to all people, and that set me off in a direction of looking at the Gospels as not only the fulfillment of the promise of Christ, which they certainly are, but the fulfillment of the promise of Christ to the whole world, not just to Israel. It turns out it's a really, really, really big theme in both the Old and the New Testament.
Yeah, it is. And as I said to you, I have this new, you know, life now as a career missionary. So my lens, my way of interpreting things is a little bit, you know, kind of focused in that direction. And over, I'm writing my paper right now for the symposium next week. And it's on missions. It's on the mystery of Ephesians 3, you know, that one of the parts of the mystery that is revealed to Paul, there's that notion of epiphany, of having something, you know, made known to you, is that the Gentiles are now part of this. And so I began reading about this, and I mean, read Isaiah. I mean, we were reading Isaiah in Advent, in our Treasury of Daily Prayer, and how often the nations are mentioned. You know, one of the most important passages there is Isaiah 49:6. And that passage just speaks to this reality. And you can see how it was in many ways formative for the whole way in which Isaiah was understood. You know, I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. Or even the Old Testament lesson for Epiphany, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. And then the nations shall come to your light, and the kings to the brightness of your rising. I just read an incredible book, everybody should read it, by Richard Baucom, called Bible and Mission, in which he illuminates how the hermeneutic, that means the way of interpreting the entire scriptures, is through the fact that God goes from the particular, you know, Abraham, Israel, David, to the universal, for everyone, for all the nations. And that in many ways, the most important thing in the Old Testament is that all nations will be blessed in Abraham, and that Jesus brings that to fulfillment. You know, we were just studying in our Greek readings the gospel lesson for next Sunday, in which Jesus is calling his disciples. He had called Peter and Andrew before, and now he's calling Philip and Nathaniel, and it's follow me, come and see. It's and immediately, you know, the missiological impulse is there. That is the nature of Jesus' ministry. That's the prophecy of the Old Testament, and you can see that Paul himself. I mean, if you were asked, Paul, who are you? He would say, I'm an apostle to the Gentiles. What is your gospel? It's a gospel for all people, Jews and Gentiles. So, I mean, it's an overwhelming theme. You're absolutely right. And I have been struck by that, especially in the last few months, as I've been studying this more and more from that perspective.
I'm convinced that each of the gospel writers, in their own way, are occupied with this question. Kind of the question of the first century church, what do we do with the Gentiles now that they're actually being brought to faith in Jesus Christ? And they they answer that in their own ways. I'm also put in mind of Paul's words in 1 Timothy, where he talks about the mystery of godliness. And this just sounds like epiphany all over the place. He was manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, yeah. proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, and taken up in glory.
Yeah, absolutely. The mission to the Gentiles was, you talk about a reversal, especially for a Pharisee like Paul. I mean, they considered them inanimate objects, stones, not even worthy of being granted any kind of life. They were the unclean of the unclean, and all of a sudden now, God's putting His name upon them. That's what James says in quoting Amos, the name of God is the presence of God. That's placing the holiness of God upon these unclean people. For the Jewish nation, even though it's deeply embedded in their Old Testament texts, it was an extraordinary move for them to make. And that Paul makes that move as a Pharisee is, I think, the way in which God opens this up for everyone to see.
So here is stanza 5. Or every foe victorious, he on his throne shall rest. From age to age more glorious, all blessing and all blessed. The tide of time shall never his covenant remove. His name shall stand forever. That name to us is love. Dr. Just, this is kind of trying to tie it all together, isn't it?
It is. And it could, on some levels, be seen as sort of a triumphalistic ending to a hymn. And I think in some ways it is. But, you know, the sense of it is that we all know that we live in some dark times and some ages are darker than others. I think we're entering into a dark age where to be a Christian is going to be persecuted, you know, to be slandered, to be marginalized. And I think this hymn gives us that hope that no matter what darkness we might live in, from age to age, his blessing is going to be there, and we will be blessed by that. And as he says, the tide of time shall never his covenant remove. And that notion of covenant, I think, is where we could perhaps read into some sacrifice there. Covenant is always a bloody thing, and the covenant is cut, at least for us now in Christ, on the cross, where he makes that covenant with us through his blood. And I think that's the reason why in our celebration of the Lord's Supper, you know, this is the new covenant in his blood that we participate in. And his name, his presence, which comes to us through that covenant, is upon us forever. Of course, the last line is so alerting, and it just, you know, you don't expect it, you know, and that name, you know, to us is love, you know. And I mean, if you take that last word, love, and then just read that back through the entire hymn to the first Hail to the Lord's Anointed, I mean, what the author has been describing through this hymn, how he comes for the poor and the needy, how he comes to forgive, to release the captives, how he comes to bring flowers in the desert, and, you know, to open up this new creation. That is the ultimate expression of his love. And what is revealed to us, the light that is shown in the darkness, is the fact that in this baby Jesus, in this son, is the embodiment of God's love. That's why he did this. The whole thing is about love. That is the number one attribute of God. And I mean, that is really why we're here, because God loves us.
Dr. Arthur Just is our guest on this Monday, January the 15th. We are looking at the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed. And when we come back, we will hear the entire hymn and get Dr. Just's final thoughts.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Here's what you'll find in the latest Issues Etc. Journal. I've written a column titled A Letter to Ex-Evangelicals. Pastor Rob Kieslowski has detailed his journey to the Lutheran Christian tradition, and Dr. Ken Sherb writes about the story of an entire city's journey to the Reformation, Strasbourg, France. We'll send you the Issues Etc. Journal for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org, the free online Issues Etc. Journal.
Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
And when Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer.
When your family gathered around Die Hard this Christmas, did all the Plutarch make you feel like benighted schlubs? Maybe you need a classical education. St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois is offering a free primer on the what's, why's, and how's of classical education on Sunday, January 28th. The Reverend Dr. Thomas Korchak of Concordia University, Chicago, will preach for divine services at 7:45 and 10 and speak at noon on how classical education truly prepares children for the future. Lunch and a school open house are included. Join Dr. Korchak at St. Paul Hamel, Greater St. Louis's only classical Lutheran school, to learn about
benefits of a classical education.
Find us at stpaulhamel.org.
Ten more minutes looking at the Epiphany hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed, here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Arthur Just is our guest. He is professor of New Testament, chairman of the Department of Exegetical Theology, and director of Spanish-speaking pastoral formation at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's authored the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Luke and the book Heaven on Earth, The Gifts of Christ in the Divine Service. You can learn more about these resources at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Just, let's listen to the entire hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed.
He comes with rescue speed to those who suffer.
Dr. Jess, your final thoughts on this hymn, Hail to the Lord's Anointed.
This morning here in Fort Wayne, Indiana, we had freezing rain, and it made everything very slick, and then we had snow. It's getting dark early still, and it's going to get cold this weekend. I know many of our pastors are going to be visiting people in the hospital who are sick, performing funerals. There's a lot of darkness in the world. People are suffering. And that's why they need the light of Epiphany. They need the light that the Christ child brings about with the dawning of this new creation that comes when he enters our world to do what only he can do, and that is to make right what has gone wrong by suffering death through blood on a cross on a hill outside of Jerusalem. This hymn is a hymn that proclaims what it is that he has come to do, that he comes for the broken, for the captives, for the poor, the needy, for sinners like all of us, to forgive us, to make us new, to give us hope, to fill us with the gifts of the Spirit, because he's the only one who can do that. And this hymn is a hymn of praise to that anointed one that we hail on this day, who has come to bring us into a place in which we can experience the freedom that the gospel brings. And that freedom is, in a sense, the essence of what we need when we are burdened by the bondage of this world. And so I pray that Epiphany light dawns in people's lives, where they can see revealed in the little hidden things, in the brokenness, they can see revealed to them the suffering Christ, and that in their own sufferings they might be joined to Christ's sufferings, that they might see that coming to church and hearing his word and singing these beautiful hymns of Epiphany and receiving his holy sacrament, they might experience that light, experience that release, and have what they see in the final line of this hymn, that his name shall stand forever. For that name to us is love.
Dr. Arthur Justice, Professor of New Testament, Chairman of the Department of Exegetical Theology, Director of Spanish-Speaking Pastoral Formation at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Luke and the book Heaven on Earth, The Gifts of Christ in the Divine Service. You can learn more about these resources at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Justice, it is always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, and a blessed Epiphany to you and to all our listeners.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we're going to be talking with Dr. Carl Fakencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, headed toward the gospel reading in Mark chapter 1, where Jesus begins his ministry, the very first thing he says in Mark's gospel. We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning right after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.